Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Kind of a newsy day, actually. We got some stuff to talk about. Bucks add a special teams coordinator. And there was an injury, and this is disappointing, Steve, because, you know, Mikhail Sergachev had missed some time. This is the start sort of the unofficial second half after the All-Star break. And then he suffered what looked to be a very gruesome leg injury. I'm not exactly sure what they're saying, if anything, after the game. I didn't hear John Cooper. But, man, it looks like this could be the end of his season.
Well, he was asked in the post game, are you preparing for the rest of the season without Mikhail Sergachev? And Cooper's comment was just, let's not think that way. But the reaction on the ice and the stretcher coming out and the whole team out there and the post game comments from Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman and John Cooper leads you to believe that they think he's done for the year.
Like, it wasn't
good. We don't know yet. We may not know. They won't have a morning skate today because they're playing a back-to-back in New York, so won't have any media avail till the game tonight. But they probably won't even have an update at that point, so it may be a little bit. But, you know, Mikhail Sergachev just activated off long-term injury reserve Wednesday, had missed 17 straight games, hadn't played since December 19th when he got hurt. Activated, and then the second period goes down, and looks to be pretty sure. I mean, injuries happen all the time. Players get hit. Players go off. When you see the teammates react the way they did, that's when you know. I mean, they know. They know when you're hurt. They know when you're injured. They know when you're really injured. And that was one of those. And, you know, we'll find out more. It's not to say for sure he's done, but at this point, you've got to almost be thinking you're without him the rest of the way now.
I couldn't tell. It looked like, you know, there was contact. Anything nefarious about the contact in, like, sort of he got his leg bent underneath him. He lost his edge or something in the skate. You know, when his leg went in an awkward position. I'm assuming that I don't think it's the knee. It almost looked like a fracture of some kind because they immobilized his leg on that stretcher.
It could have been that. It also, the skate blade from Lafreniere got near his Achilles. Now, you didn't see blood or anything out there, so maybe that not. But, I mean, it could have been a number of things. I mean, it looks like he lost his edge, and then his leg got caught underneath him.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really hard to tell what happened. But, you know,
but
like
he wasn't
going
to bear any weight on it, that's no. For sure.
And, you know, he's got his you know, head in his jersey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like I said, you always look at the reaction of the players.
Right.
They know. Like, they can tell instantly which ones are the bad injuries, which ones are the really bad injuries.
Right.
And this one looked to be a really bad one.
So, to be clear, you didn't see anything wrong with the contact that had happened before the play?
No, I mean, nothing dirty or anything like that. Not at all. I mean, they're going for the puck there. I think he lost an edge. So, no, I didn't see anything dirty there.
I thought that, you know, it's the first game back after the All-Star break, and the Rangers played Jonathan Quick, which we could talk about. It's interesting. He's got or entered the game with a 7-0-1 record against the Lightning. But Shesterkin was the All-Star. Anyway, I didn't think that they didn't seem to have a little bit of juice. They seemed to be just a little bit. And that maybe that's expected of both teams. You haven't played in 10 days.
Well, the Rangers played Monday.
They did play.
Yeah,
okay,
so
they had
their
legs
game.
Under them a little bit.
Yeah, I thought the Lightning played a good first period. I you know, coming off 11 days between games and that, I thought they played a good first period. I thought they hit a wall in the second. And then when Sergachev went down, I think that changes everything too. You know, that's hard. As a player, that's hard. You know, maybe they regrouped. And in the third, they played better. I thought they found some legs in the third.
They got it to 2-1.
Mm-hmm. Great shot by Hagel. Great pass by Chernak.
Mm-hmm.
Nikita Kucherov got the secondary assist, so he retakes the points lead for the season at 86 over nice. Nathan MacKinnon. But they didn't get a power play till what, 4 minutes left in the game?
Yeah, it was late.
You know, they have the best power play in the NHL. Didn't look that great on that one, although Victor Hedman did hit the post.
Yeah, there was that.
He shocked Jonathan Quick with a quick shot and blistered it by him, but it went off the post and out. So
right.
So and then they give up an empty netter. So it ends up being a 3-1 final, but
yeah, it was really 2-1. I guess they played better than I thought. I don't know. Like I said, there's bound to be a little bit of rust for both teams, but
well, let's not forget the Rangers are a first place team.
Yeah, they're really good.
I mean, they're the second or third best team record wise in the East.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they came out playing, you know, Ottawa or somebody.
Right.
They played a Rangers team that already had a game under their belt after the All-Star break, and it was a really good team. A really good defensive team, too.
With all due respect to those in Ottawa.
Ottawa's played better of late, but they've dug themselves a hole.
Well, like they're playing the crappiest team in the NHL.
I didn't say San Jose, but because that's true. The worst team.
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunate because he's a big piece of what they do. He's still, you know what always gets me with Sergachev? He's still so stinking young. Is he 26 now?
He's 25. He's younger, 25. I believe, than Nick Perbix and Darren Radish.
It's incredible. Like, this guy, you know, every year you figure like, well, he's in his mid-20s. No, not yet. He's always younger than you think he is. But disappointing because he had missed, you know, that 11-game stretch or whatever, and then to come back and, you know, barely be on the ice and then whammo.
Sergachev's 25.
Okay.
Perbix is 25 as well, but I think he's 10 days older than Sergachev.
There you go.
And Darren Radish is 27. These are guys that have just been up recently.
Over the hill.
You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sergachev, 25 years old, the amount of games he's played and what he's done so far, it's incredible.
A lot.
I mean, because remember, he was drafted young, and then he was, the ninth or tenth overall pick, then traded here in the Jonathan Drouin trade from Montreal. And, you know, pretty much was here, you know, didn't spend a lot of time in the minors. It was pretty much, you know, in the NHL.
Yeah. That's gone well up until, you know, whatever the lower body injury is that we won't find out about. That's the thing, too, is like, yeah, he's indefinite, or yeah, he's out for the year. What do you have? We'd rather not say. Kills me about that. And I get it, sort of. I mean, like, they don't want a little bullseye pasted on every injury, but it's just kind of funny to me a little bit.
Well, and the other thing is, and you don't like to think this way yet, but if Sergachev is out for the rest of the season, then now you have $8-9 million of cap space.
See, I didn't know how that works. So because he's going to go on IR or IL, whatever they call it in the NHL, you get to recoup cap space for that?
Well, because if you're not going to use his salary at all for the remaining of the season, you get his salary. That's what they did with Kucherov a few years ago.
Okay.
They had his salary of whatever, $8-9 million, whatever it was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't play the whole season, so you got that $8-9 million that you could spend over the cap. For injury, LTIR money is what it's called.
Okay.
That's how they do it. Brent Seabrook has been on this roster for a couple of years now. They got him in the Tyler Johnson trade. He's making $6.875 million and has for several years from the Lightning. You've never seen him on the ice because he's basically retired with injury, but he's still under contract, so he wants to get paid. So his contract was traded here. So the Lightning have been in LTIR money for years. That's what they did with Kucherov that year. So if Sergachev can't go the rest of the way, if he's not going to come back this year in the regular season,
they get $8 million.
Well, $8.5 million of cap space, essentially.
Sweet, sweet.
So you know when they always talk about, well, we can't make deals, there is a chance if he, you know, this is all hypothetical because if he can come back in April, then you don't have that money available.
Right.
But it does, and the trade deadline is a month from today in the NHL.
Huh.
March 8th.
So yeah, I mean, it sounds like the right thing to do. I don't know.
Well,
Breezeball.
Now, the other part is you've got the cap space, but do you have the pieces to pull the trade off too?
Right.
You know, do you have enough prospects or picks? And they don't have many picks, but So it'll be interesting if Sergachev is out for the rest of the season. Will they make moves? I mean, more than likely, Julian Breezeball is a guy who's going to go for it. You know, if you remember a couple years ago, the second cup, when they traded for David Savard. And they traded some picks. They got Detroit to take half his salary.
Mm-hmm.
And then Columbus kept a quarter of his salary, so the Lightning basically played a quarter of the salary, something like that. You know, but basically worked a three-team trade so that the Lightning could afford him because he took so little cap space for them because you put it on a third party. And Julien Brisebois was asked about that trade. And he said, look, I thought we had a chance to win it all. And we had a chance to get a piece in David Savard that I thought could help us. He goes, if we wouldn't have won and I didn't make that move, I would have never let myself forget that. Like,
oh, well.
If I have a chance to make a move to make this team better and I don't do it, I'd rather make the move and not work than not make the move and regret it later.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing there, but.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
If Julian has a move he can make that he thinks gives this team a shot to win the Stanley Cup and make them better.
Yeah.
He will do it. And that's, you know, you've seen him trade pick after pick after pick.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
they still don't have a first-round pick for the next two drafts, and they haven't had one for a couple drafts. They don't have a second-round pick next year either.
He doesn't care about those.
You know, I mean, but it's gotten guys like Barclay Goodrow back and Blake Coleman back and Brandon Hagel back. And, you know, you're getting guys who have helped you win. Hagel hasn't won a cup yet, but guys that helped you win cups.
Yeah.
And so is it worth giving up first-round picks to win a cup? No question.
Yeah, no, every day.
Because those first-round picks are not guaranteed to do anything.
Uh-uh. No, they're not, especially in hockey. So
prospects are not guaranteed to do anything either. They may be the greatest prospect in the minors. Not guaranteed to do anything.
Right. And they could use it's such a tough loss because he's such a big part of what they do, and there's the emotional part of it, but they definitely could use some help. We'll see what they do. The Bucks, meanwhile, they're hiring a special teams coordinator, finally. Only took a few days. They probably interviewed eight or nine guys, but it is Thomas McGahey, who spent the last 6 years with the New York Giants as their special teams coordinator. I got to tell you, I was looking at some of the, you know, results and stuff. I don't know. Their special teams, I think, of course, they had trouble with the kicker in New York. Graham Gano missed 35% of his field goals, and they replaced him with Randy Bullock, and he got injured. And then before they even got Cade York on the field, he was injured, and they ended up with Mason Crosby. So he can't kick the ball himself.
I was going to say, when you're down to your fourth kicker, is that really the special teams coordinator fault?
But overall, though, in terms of coverage, everything, you throw the whole pie out there. 2 years ago, they were 28th in the NFL. I can't imagine. I don't have it in front of me that what they could not have been much higher last year. This guy's got a lot of experience. I mean, he's bounced around quite a bit. He's a former defensive back that played for the Bengals and the Eagles. But, man, he has been, you know, pretty much a tour of the NFL during his coaching career. So I guess he knows what the good news is. He knows what it looks like. The bad news is they seem to keep getting rid of him every few years. So I'm not sure what that means. But, hey, you know, it's a new environment over there, new coaches. They still need a receivers coach. They potentially could need a quarterback coach. So they got to check a lot of boxes here. But, all I know is this guy's going to get, you know, one hell of an opportunity to come in here and, you know, try to shake it up. I think the biggest need that this team has, coverage is okay, but their return game is terrible. And, you know, there's specialists that aren't having the best of years either. I mean, even Jake Camardo, who averaged 50.1 last season, you know, very few inside the 20. I mean, almost never.
Well, very few inside the 20, and he often outkicks his coverage.
He does. Very often.
That's the biggest complaint I have of Camardo, is that sometimes he gets too much of it, and, you know, it's great that you kicked it 65 yards. If they returned at 30, what's it matter?
Not so good if they have a full head of steam for 20 until they encounter one of the guys covering a kick, you know. Mm-hmm. He did do that because his average was 50.1. His net was well below that in the 40s. So there's that sort of, you know, thing there. As far as the special teams coach goes, they had one in-house candidate, and I'm not sure what he's going to do, if he's going to stay as the assistant special teams coach or not. I think he's a good coach, is Keith Tandy. Played safety for the Bucks, kind of a make it guy. Always been a loyal soldier. So he might very well remain in that post. You know, we just don't know. Or maybe there'll be some additions with that. So Bucks shaking it up on their coaching staff. I mean, they still have a receivers coach open. Presumably, you know, they could have quarterbacks. We're still waiting to see if Thad Lewis is going to be their guy. He supposedly was on the list of some teams to visit. He was also a candidate for the offensive coordinator's job. So I'm not exactly sure how this is all going to shake out, but offensive line coaches, I'm telling you, are important, as is your special teams. I don't think people realize that the special teams coach is the one guy that talks to every player, because he has offensive players, he has defensive players, and he has a couple specialists too. But they're the ones that stand up in the room many times on Saturday night and address the team, because they have them under their control. And I think the Bucks have been just okay. You know, where they lack is their return game is really, really bad. It just hasn't been good for a while. It's hard to return kicks in the NFL anymore, especially kickoffs. They usually go in the end zone. But they could block it up better. And look, it's a whole new coaching staff. I mean, you know, they had 9 changes a year ago, and I think they're headed for not quite as many, but a good many this season. And in a league where continuity is king, that's a lot to give up. But that's where we're at. You know, they're out there trying to find coaches, and they should have their staff squared away before they get to Indianapolis here at the end of this month anyway. So that's sort of – some of those talks can go as long as that, but for the most part, I'm sure they want their staff kind of wrapped up here. Hey, we've even got a few mailbag questions we can get to here in just a second before we wrap it up. But, you know, for the past 14 years, the skilled pros of May Electric Solar, they've been installing solar energy systems all over the state of Florida, and they provide the most reliable solar equipment, the best installation methods and service, while helping homeowners cut energy costs with an environmentally friendly investment. May Electric Solar uses their own skilled employees, never subcontractors, and they have always offered the safest and most reliable equipment. Now May Electric Solar offers a 30-year no-cost equipment replacement and labor warranty. That means for 30 years, May Electric Solar, backed by Solar Insure, means that your roof, electrical, and equipment replacement is all totally covered. Solar Insure even survives May Electric Solar, and it's owned by the homeowner with no deductibles or additional fees. This policy will transfer to a new homeowner as well. It's not a blanket coverage insurance policy. In fact, only the best contractors are allowed to be part of this program. May Electric Solar, their reputation and history of workmanship has really earned them this membership. To learn more about May Electric Solar's installation and their 30-year warranty, call 727-819-2862 or visit mayelectricsolar.com. Hey, we got a couple of mailbag questions left over from the other day, so let's hit those for a little bit.
All right, Matt asks, is Russell Gage going to be on the team next year?
You know, it's a great question. I'm not sure that he has any identifiable monies left over in terms of, you know, under contract, not under contract. I haven't looked at his salary situation, but I do recall that he took a reduction in some salary to remain with the team a year ago. Then he sustained that injury. I like Russ because he's a veteran receiver, especially in the red zone, that shows up. I think they missed him. It was unfortunate he got hurt at the Jets, you know, training facility when they went up there at the very start of the year, and just, you know, wasn't able to do anything. But my guess is that he's probably not going to be back. I'd have to look at the salary cap situation. A lot of these guys push money and different things. But I just haven't seen him, so I don't know what kind of shape he's in or any, you know, what his plans are. They could really use him. They need another veteran presence. And then you say to yourself, well, what if Mike Evans isn't back at all? You know, who are your veterans? You got really Chris Godwin. I mean, David Moore's been in the league for a while, but there's a void there. So they'd have to go somewhere, I think.
All right. A biased fan emailed you. Says, Jason Light may be the best drafter in the league, but the 2016 NFL draft was one of the worst imaginable. What do you think Light learned from draft busts like Vernon Hargraves, Noah Spence, and Roberto Aguayo?
Not to take a place kicker very high. Let's start there.
Well, he took Matt Gay a few drafts later.
Okay, so he didn't learn his lesson. No, you know, I've talked to him about this before, and I think, first of all, no one's going to bat 1,000. You don't want to bat zero either. But there was a definite shift in terms of sort of philosophically where they were going and where they needed to pivot and go. And, you know, getting some guys like a John Spytek, Mike Beal, Mike Greenberg, and that on the same page has been huge, you know. And I think that they started looking harder at guys and who they were rather than what they played or how well they played. Like, it was bigger than just, you know, hey, this guy went to Florida, he seems like a pretty good corner, let's draft him. And I'm not suggesting it was ever that simple, but I really do think that they're looking for a certain type of player who, you know, you don't want to say would play for free, but just loves football to the point where, you know, he's going to excel. Whatever it is he does in life, he's going to excel. And so they've kind of put up a filter, I think, that's served them well in some of these picks. And, you know, they have the same sort of requirements. You know, we want guys that can run. We want, you know, aggressive football players and this and that. But you also want good teammates. You want guys that are just, you know, selfless, interested in winning. That's hard to find these days, man, you know. But that draft was epically bad. And sometimes it's beyond your control. You know, guys just don't perform well or get hurt or, you know, anything can sideline them. Vernon Hargreaves, I thought, was overdrafted for sure, but I also don't think it helped him coming back here because this was sort of home for him. I think a lot of times that's a difficult thing to do is you know, play for a team that you grew up rooting, et cetera. Not making excuses for him, but he never really got it, you know, and they kind of try to play him in the slot for a while, try to play him outside, try to train him both inside and outside. It was just wasn't going to be. Noah Spence, he was a dude that was going to go to Ohio State and got a little bit of trouble, and he ended up, I think, if memory serves, at Western Kentucky, perhaps. Anyway, he had a lot of sacks and was kind of undersized at this level and just, you know, never really flashed the way he's supposed to. It was a tough draft. They didn't have anything left over it, but I think if you just look from that point on how much better they have been in building a roster and all of that stuff. So I credit John Spytek, Mike Beal, Jason, listening to those guys has helped, Mike Greenberg. They're just kind of on a good run right now, and you just want to kind of keep it going if you can. But I do think that they have selfless guys back there that will work hard and give the franchise its best answers.
Frank asks, why is no one talking about Baker Mayfield going to Denver? Seems Sean Payton had some success with another short of stature quarterback.
I don't know why no one's talking about it, because I think Baker and Sean have, you know, very similar personalities, to be honest with you. I mean, they're both ballers. They're both intense as hell. Might be a little too much for Baker at this point. But, look, Denver needs a quarterback. And I think, for that matter, any team, and there are a bunch of them out there that are needing of a quarterback and may not draft one, you got to at least maybe pick up the phone and make the call, you know. There could be a door number two out there for him. But I think Denver makes sense. I mean, from a stature standpoint, he's not much bigger than Russell. Throws better off the platform. He's a winner. And I guess it would just, you know, come down to whether Baker is going for the money, the fit, or a combination of the two. I know he really wants to stay here. Doesn't mean it's exclusive that he's, you know, some kind of package deal with the offensive coordinator, but the more they can do, you know, to entice him, the better, just to eliminate that possibility. And at the end of the day, I still think personally that somebody has to be willing to plunk a franchise tag on him, which is a lot of money. It's $36 million, but you know what? If you got things going here in Tampa, you might want to stay with it, you know. And Denver, it feels to me like and I don't know where they pick exactly, but Sean's not in it for the long term. I don't know how many year of a deal he signed. Sean is not developed quarterbacks. You know, he took a Drew Brees that was sort of coming off shoulder surgery, and it was either him or Dante Culpepper, and you know, he chose Brees and Miami chose Culpepper, and we see how it worked out. But he was a special talent. I thought it would work with Russ. I don't know why it didn't, to be honest with you. I'm not that whole thing doesn't make sense to me. But I would imagine that they're going to be in it for one of these draft picks, because it's a very rich quarterback heavy draft that you can get all the way through the second round. But what do I know? I mean, I can't read that situation very well. I think any team, in my opinion, any team that wants to win and wants to win now should be very receptive to Baker Mayfield. I think he's done that much help to himself. He's been on, you know, the talk shows and the whole thing and won awards. But to me, he can play in any system. He can integrate himself with his teammates pretty quickly. Like, I'm not sure what more you want.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
We'll switch gears, and Craig in Vegas had tweeted us. Says, this offseason, Major League Baseball free agency has been great if you're an elite player, but most players are still not signed with the fall of Bally Sports. Does this finally get a cap in place, also a floor? For example, the A's won't spend any money with a pending move. Seems like players have a bad deal now.
I mean, I don't know, Steve. How do you feel? I think it's a strong union. You're not going to break it.
I think that the union has been awful for players, and that Tony Clark and those who run the union should have been fired years ago.
I think they only get the really, really hot ticket guys paid. I don't think they do a very good job for the rank and file.
Bingo. The union's job should not be to get a guy a $500 million contract. Agreed. Or a $700 million
contract. I agree with that.
That's wonderful and great, and I'm not saying they shouldn't exist. I'm saying that the players need to take a bigger percentage of the revenue in baseball, like they do in every other sport.
Because they're the lowest, right, of the major sports?
Last I saw, and I don't, you know, you don't necessarily know all their revenues because it's not split the same way as the other sports. But they, NHL, it's like 48 or 49%. NFL is 50 or maybe even a little bit more than 50 go to the players. NBA is around that number. Baseball was at 38%.
Wow. That's a lot difference there. Yeah.
You know, if you're leaving 12% of the revenue of the sport on the table because you won't put a cap and a floor in, and I think it's bad for fans to not have a cap, and it's just showing what the Dodgers are doing this year. And that's great that Shohei Ohtani's going to get $700 million, even if, you know, $650 of it's paid 15 years from now. I don't have a problem with players making the money. But when the whole of the players is getting a lot less than every other sport, you're doing it wrong as a union. The union's job is not to protect one guy's big contract. The goal of the union should be to get the most money for the players. You figure out how you divvy it up after that. Who cares? But you're leaving 12% of revenues on the table?
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's criminal.
Yeah, you shouldn't be there when the rest of the leagues are where they're at it. Nearly, you know, it says you're a partner, and you should be, and they're not, clearly.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Bryce Harper and Shohei Ohtani and, you know, Mike Trout get huge contracts, and congratulations, and, you know, look, yeah, they're phenomenal players. They deserve to be the highest paid in the sport. I'm, you know, not arguing that, but
right
when they, and they finally started to fix some of the minor league problems. I mean, that was really criminal, the way they treated minor leaguers, baseball. The amount of money and everything else they gave. Now, they finally have started to fix that and become better. But when the rank-and-file players should be making a lot more than they are, because you want to protect 3 guys or 10 guys as contracts, to me, that's, what's the point of the union at that point?
Right.
Like, you're not doing the job of the union. You're just protecting a few guys that want to get paid more than everybody else. And I understand why Shohei Ohtani may want that deal, or Bryce Harper, or, you know, et cetera. But if I'm the union, my job is to get the most money for the group of players. And they don't do that.
Yeah, I think baseball has a definite problem in terms of revenue sharing or the lack thereof. And that affects competitive balance. And the Rays have bumped against this every year, and they managed to come out on top with just superior cap management and scouting and the players they get. It's so unlikely for them to do what they've done. I mean, at some point, there's a lot of things I would fix about the NFL, but that's probably one. The other one would be full-time officials. I still can't understand why a business that makes as much money as they do, you know, are using, and nothing against this, but insurance and car salesmen and you know, computer programmers on the weekends as their officials. It's just weird to me, man.
It is, like, although, and I'll play devil's advocate for a bit, and I haven't talked to any of them, so I don't know if this is the case, but... Okay, so NFL officials, they make pretty good money. I think they make something like $150 a year, around there, if I recall, from the NFL. But some of them are lawyers and everything else. They may be making more than that in their outside jobs.
Oh, no doubt. I'm not saying it's purely financial.
So do they want to be full-time employees of the NFL where they can't go then do the other stuff? I don't
know.
Well,
maybe they don't, but there'll be no shortage of applicants. Let's put it that way.
Well, but assuming that you have the best of the best already working for you.
You assume that, but then you haven't canvassed, you know, how many people could be as good or better that just say, I'm not going to be in that. I'll put myself in that situation in 5 or 10 years. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that answer. I know that, you know, some sports struggle to get in, you know, I know that hockey's always looking for more referees and linemen.
Right.
And they have,
that's hard to, you got to skate.
They
man.
Do a lot. They do a lot of recruiting of, you know, former players, particularly former minor league players that never really made the NHL. Maybe had a cup of coffee, but that was it. You know, so they haven't made a ton of money in their career, but they know hockey. This, I mean, they're always recruiting them. They have camps. They have, they do all kinds of stuff with that in hockey, where they're trying to find more people. I know the NFL puts up a job, and there's going to be a million applicants, but are they any good?
True.
I mean, you know, to be honest, becoming a referee in sports anymore talk about a thankless job.
Yeah.
Because everything is so scrutinized with HD and 4K and 8K and where every blade of grass the blade of grass touched the ball before he secured it. So it's not a catch. I mean, you know, how are you supposed to see that in real time when the players are bigger, faster, stronger than ever? I mean, the fact that they get most of the calls right,
it's pretty impressive. It really is.
I mean, that's not to say they don't blow a few here and there.
Right.
But they're right a lot more often than they're wrong.
Yeah, and it's surprisingly so, but they are.
You know, I mean, there's some subjective ones of was that really a hold or was it really pass interference? Those are tougher ones, but I mean, they're pretty good. And you know, the fact that they're not full-time sounds like it's bad, but maybe they don't want it. I don't know. Like I said, I haven't talked to anyone to know that. You know, it's the one sport you don't have to be full time because you don't have games 3 times, 4 times a week, 6 times a week in baseball.
Yeah, the really interesting thing is I think a lot of them have a lot of money. Just is my personal opinion. I don't have a poll on that, but
well, I think to put up with some of the crap they put up with, you might need to have a lot of money.
They deserve it. Yeah, for sure. Especially on the sidelines, man. Those coaches just wear those guys out. I know Bruce had a really good reputation with the officials. They had to hold him back a few times, but
I know I've talked to some coaches over the years that have some funny stories with. I remember one of the assistant coaches on the Braves when I did this 20 years ago, and was talking to him, and he was a minor league manager in his, you know, younger days. He was an older gentleman at that point. And he was also an alcoholic, and so always drinking. He goes, so Sunday games I get thrown out of. Those are afternoon games.
Oh.
So he says, there's some call in the first inning, and I go out there, and I'm making a stink and, you know, getting upset. And the umpire is just standing there, and I'm getting more mad and more mad. And he finally says, I know what you're doing. He goes, I know you were out late last night. And if I got to stand out here in this heat, you're going to stand out here too. And he wouldn't throw him out no matter what he said. He wasn't about to throw him out.
You're going
to
stand here the whole time. I don't care.
He goes, he was so ticked off.
Please throw me out of this game. No.
All he wanted to do was go to the clubhouse and sleep.
Right. Get a little AC. That's a great
one. And the umpire
one.
Was like, I know what you're doing.
I'm not having it, man. You're going to be out here every minute.
I don't care what you say to me. You're staying.
Yeah. Call me anything you want. That's hilarious. All right. Tomorrow on the extravaganza, we'll get you ready for the Super Bowl in Las Vegas. It's going to be a good one, man. San Francisco 49ers against the Kansas City Swifties. Should be great. I know who my kids are rooting for, the Chiefs, naturally. And the Lightning.
Do they even know what other team is in the Super Bowl against
Oh,
the
sure
Chiefs?
They do. Okay. Yeah, well, they do. Only because they've been there, you know,
well,
at
that's
that
true.
Field.
That's true. Okay. Do most of the Swifties even know the other team on the field?
No. Not if you're just new to the game.
Yeah.
Well, they may have learned it by now, but I mean, okay. I'm just saying, she's brought in so many millions of people that aren't really football fans, and so I think they're just kind of falling into, yeah, who's the opponent this week? I don't know. I mean, it's possible that...
Does she perform at halftime with Usher? That's my
no,
question.
No, absolutely not. She's so much beyond Usher, it's not even funny, with all due respect to Usher. Nowadays, they don't only pay these guys, it's just, you know, it's a chance for people to stream their music live after the show and stuff.
No, they not pay. I think they have the artist pick up half the tab for it, like
they
all
do.
The production
you have to,
costs and stuff.
You have to pay the production. Man, this NFL. Telling you, man, they can print money like nobody's business. As Jim Rohn would say, I make a lot of money, that's why I spend a lot of money. I get it. And then we got, I think I mentioned the Lightning continue their road trip, this time against another New York team, the mm-hmm. Islanders.
Yep, another ESPN game tonight. So two straight games,
is
not
wow.
on Bally. So
back-to-back national TV, man.
Well, when they're in New York, it
always.
They just yeah. want the New York teams on there. So
I understand. And you just got to start getting some points, munch some points here on the road trip, get as many as you have games, I suppose.
Well, look, yeah, four. It's a 4-game road trip. You want to get at least 5 points on it. So you didn't get any against New York.
Probably need some tonight.
You'd like to win against the Islanders and the Blue Jackets tonight yep. and Saturday. And then you've got the final game at Boston. You can get a right. point out of that. You get your 5 out of 4 games. If you can get 2 points there, you get 6 out of 4.
Right. Well, you know, this weekend, of course, all about the Super Bowl and whether Patrick Mahomes is the next GOAT. Can Kyle Shanahan finally exercise those demons that he's had in Super Bowls past? There's a lot of great storylines. We'll get to all of them tomorrow on Sports Day Tampa Bay. Thanks for listening. For Steve Burstick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.